A film countdown and a grainy color film of Kennedy's Dallas motorcade is projected onto a screen.
As the president was coming down from Houston Street making his turn, it was about halfway down there, I had a shot.
Only one person filmed the assassination of President John F. Kennedy from start to finish.
Then I had another shot or two. I couldn't say whether it was one or two.
His home movie was key evidence for anyone with a theory about who shot JFK.
People were screaming. It was utter chaos. Everybody was laying flat on the ground almost.
The day the world changed forever, with the voices of those who were there.
It appears as though something has happened in the motorcade route. Something, I repeat, has happened in the motorcade route.
Three shots were heard to ring out. Mrs. Kennedy was heard by reporters nearby to scream, "Oh no."
For the first time, bringing together his words and pictures, the man with the camera reveals what really happened.
Mr. Zapruder, certainly no one had a better view of the assassination than you did.
Abe Zapruder got it from beginning to end. This middle-aged garment manufacturer got the only filmed evidence of the assassination, and not one of those world-famous photographers back there in the press bus.
A gentleman just walked in our studio that I am meeting for the first time, as well as you. This is WFAA-TV in Dallas, Texas. May I have your name, please, sir?
My name is Abraham Zapruder.
Mr. Zapruder?
Zapruder, yes, sir.
Zapruder. And would you tell us your story, please, sir?
I'm telling you right straight out that if you are at all sensitive, if you're at all queasy, then don't watch this film.
JFK, the home movie that changed the world. Color footage looking down on clouds taken from an airplane. November 21, 1963, 1:30 p.m., 23 hours before assassination.
President Kennedy went to Texas to take his program to the people. He had carried the state by only a narrow margin in the 1960 election.
Dignitaries are lined up to shake hands with the president and first lady as they descend the steps of the presidential jet.
Traveling with the presidential party are Vice President Lyndon Johnson and Mrs. Johnson and Texas Governor John Connally and Mrs. Nellie Connally.
A big crowd has gathered to meet the first couple. Voice of Terry Wood, spectator, aged 16.
We thought John Kennedy was a handsome, heroic figure. We all felt we loved the Kennedys.
She was the royalty that our country had never had. She was very glamorous, very attractive, beautifully dressed.
Voice of Joanne Sloan, spectator, age 24. The Kennedys get into an open-top car on the runway as they wave to the crowds. Voice of Abraham Zapruder.
I love that man, my family loved that man, there were millions, I'm sure, loved that man. He was an inspiration to the youth of America. I believe it's the first time that in this country we had a president as young as Kennedy was.
Granddaughter Alexandra Zapruder.
My grandfather had been taking home movies since the mid-1930s. He loved taking home movies, and he took them of everything.
When he was looking to buy a camera, he came in, he says his name was Abe Zapruder, and he says he's looking for a camera, and pulled off a camera of the shelf. It was an 8mm, and it was a Bell & Howell. So he bought the camera from me. I guess the price was right.
Voice of Sam Berger, Peacock Jewelry, Dallas.
Thursday evening, Houston.
9:30, 15 hours before assassination.
President Kennedy speaks to the League of United Latin American Citizens. Then, to ensure that his words will be understood by all, he calls on Mrs. Kennedy to address the League in Spanish.
I'm especially happy to be with you who form part of the noble Spanish tradition that remains alive and vigorous. voice of Tom Wicker, White House correspondent, The New York Times.
She spoke crisp Spanish, very simple little speech, but got a big hand from her. I remember the president in the background looking a little lost and out of place.
The crowd there was, I'm sure, over capacity. When he walked into our banquet, everybody went wild, hollering, Viva Kennedy, Viva Kennedy.
Voice of Benny Martinez, social justice campaigner, and Alexandra Zapruder, granddaughter.
My grandfather was very determined to be an American. He was born in 1905 in Imperial Russia. They followed the pattern of many East European Jews of that time. You know, he came here at 15 years old. He had no education. He had never studied in school. He learned English right away in night school. And then he did very much what Jews did then. He went to work on 7th Avenue in the garment industry. My grandmother fell in love with my grandfather immediately. He fell in love with her too. And you can see it in the pictures of them together. And then they had an opportunity to go to Dallas. He got Jennifer Jr.'s Off the Ground Undress Company. I think it was a pretty good working environment. Everybody called him Mr. Z. My grandfather and grandmother were big fans of John F. Kennedy. Our family really believed that President Kennedy could make the world a better place.
November 22, 1963, 8:45 a.m., 3 hours, 45 minutes before assassination, and vast crowds have gathered to see the Kennedys.
Friday morning, November 22nd. It's 8:45, and the weather is misty.
Kennedy mounts a platform to give a speech at a lectern under gray skies.
In spite of the weather, a large and exuberant crowd turns out to see and hear the president.
Voice of Tom Wicker, White House correspondent, The New York Times.
The president appeared in the parking lot that morning without Mrs. Kennedy. There was some obvious disappointment in the crowd, and he made a nice remark.
There are no faint hearts in Fort Worth, and I appreciate your being here this morning. Mrs. Kennedy is organizing herself. It takes longer. But, of course, she looks better than we do when she does it. But we appreciate your welcome.
Kennedy greets the crowds, and a sea of hands are offered as he moves past them, and he shakes as many hands as he can, wearing a broad smile. ...9:10 a.m., 3 hours, 20 minutes before assassination.
Here comes the president.
Another mass gathering and another speech, but this time indoors at Fort Worth Chamber of Commerce.
And that's Mrs. Kennedy coming in. And for the ladies in the audience, she's wearing a pink outfit trimmed in black.
3 years ago, I introduced myself in Paris by saying that I was the man who had accompanied Mrs. Kennedy to Paris. I'm getting that same sensation as I travel around Texas. Nobody wonders what Lyndon and I wear.
A standing ovation for the Kennedys, and Jackie Kennedy stands briefly to acknowledge the audience. Color footage of the couple getting into an open-top car outside the venue. And they travel to the airport, and their plane waiting on the runway, waving at the crowds as they go.
Friday morning, the presidential jet leaves Fort Worth for the short flight to Dallas, where the president has a scheduled luncheon address.
Dallas, the plane touches down, 11:30 a.m., 60 minutes before assassination. A film countdown and Zapruder's camera is lying on a table beside some books.
I didn't have a camera with me at all that morning. I never believed I'd be able to see the president.
So it was very surprising that he didn't bring his camera. He said, you know, I'm too short, I won't be able to see anything. He was sort of reserved. He didn't have a lot of confidence, partly because he didn't have a lot of education. And so he wasn't always very comfortable taking a risk or putting himself out there. even though he was very bright and very clever, very funny, very smart, he was hesitant in a way. And so I think he just sort of decided not to gamble on it somehow. And it was Lillian Rogers, his assistant, who said, "You're the one who's been taking home movies for 30 years. You know, you have to go home and get your camera."
Voice of Alexandra Zapruder, granddaughter, and voice of Abraham Zapruder.
Yeah, I believe I wouldn't have had the pictures at all if it wasn't for my secretary, Mrs. Rogers, who made me go home and get the camera.
And it really is kind of a remarkable close call, because history would be completely different if we didn't have that film.
JFK, the home movie that changed the world. JFK, the home movie that changed the world. November 22, 1963, the presidential jet touches down in Dallas. 11:37 a.m., 53 minutes before assassination.
Friday morning, the president's jet lands at the Dallas airport, Love Field. Several thousand enthusiastic Texans are on hand to give the president and Mrs. Kennedy a warm welcome.
I can remember the sky being so blue, and then these beautiful people get off the plane. People like I'd never seen anybody in a tailored suit or any woman that had a high fashion or makeup. I remember the makeup. It was so pristine.
Voice of David Wallace, spectator aged 18.
Mrs. Kennedy is making one of her first public appearances in several months.
The First Lady has a bouquet of red roses.
It's unusual that Mrs. Kennedy was along at all, because she didn't ordinarily make this kind of trip with him.
Voice of Tom Wicker, White House correspondent, The New York Times. The crowd is packed in tight, and the Kennedys are offered countless hands to shake, and numerous camera lenses are pointed at them. Three months earlier, August 1963, the president arrives on the White House lawn by helicopter to be met by his family. Voice of Clint Hill, Mrs. Kennedy's bodyguard.
Mrs. Kennedy, in August of 1963, was pregnant. And we were up on Cape Cod, and she all of a sudden began having labor pains when the baby was born. She named him Patrick Bouvier Kennedy. And then it was discovered that he had a medical problem.
Color footage of the hospital.
Unfortunately, he died about another day later. And they had a funeral service in Boston, and he was buried in Boston. We felt we had lost a member of our family.
Surrounded by cameras and well-wishers, the Kennedys get into a limousine.
She remained in a very saddened, depressed state for a long time.
Cameramen surround the limousine. A military helicopter lands, and the Kennedys emerge.
Gradually, she decided that she would accompany her husband on his trip into Texas to help him with his re-election bid for 1964.
Dallas, November 22, 1963, 11:45 a.m., 45 minutes before assassination.
Although the president is running behind schedule, he pauses momentarily to shake a few hands.
What surprised me a little bit was that Mrs. Kennedy followed right along. Now, she's always a little bit shy and didn't usually go into a crowd like that, but in this occasion, she did.
My aunt and her best friend went down to Love Field to greet the president and the first lady when they arrived. My aunt remembers everyone pushing to see the president, and she just was stunned by how handsome and charming he was. And my uncle Myron, who was watching the motorcade from his office overlooking Main Street. My grandfather was at Jennifer Jr.'s. It was just across the way from Dealey Plaza. Pretty much the whole factory, and went down to see the president. They closed the office at lunch, and everyone went down. The whole family was wrapped up in this exciting moment.
Friday, 10 minutes before noon. The motorcade begins the 11-mile ride to the Dallas Trademark, where the president is to deliver a major address. Governor and Mrs. Connally ride in the presidential limousine.
Seated in the back of the open-top limousine, the Kennedys are all smiles. An aerial view of Dealey Plaza, Dallas. 12 noon, 30 minutes before assassination. Voice of Abraham Zapruder.
After coming back with my camera from my house, I went downstairs. It was about 12. And I was looking for a place where it'll be good enough to take pictures. I've changed the place three times. One place I couldn't stand very erect. Another place, a tree was in my way. And finally, I picked the very spot I stopped at.
And we decided that would be the best place because it said you can get up here, you'll be above everybody. No matter how many people were down here, you won't have anybody blocking your view. He had vertigo, though. If he got up there, he'd get dizzy. So he said, you'll have to stand behind me and hold on to me. I said, it's no problem at all. So we both got up there and I stood behind him and I held on to him.
Voice of Marilyn Sitzman, Zapruder's receptionist.
I told her to watch me while I take those pictures because using a zoom lens, you kind of get dizzy and it says, I might have to have somebody to hold on to. So we were kind of joking.
Voice of Clint Hill, Mrs. Kennedy's bodyguard.
It had been raining, a slight drizzle. And because of that, the supervisor called to see what the weather was like and to make a determination about whether or not we would leave the bubble top in the car. Now, the bubble top is simply a piece of glass. It was decided that because the weather was clearing up, the bubble top would be off. Anytime we were in an open car, we were very concerned because we all knew the vulnerability whenever you were in an open car.
The president always felt that if the people were good enough to come out and see him, that he was good enough to sit there in the open car and let them see him.
12:25, 5 minutes before assassination.
They routed us right through the heart of the town. Dallas has sort of canyon streets. They're quite narrow, and the building's fairly tall. I mean, 10-story building. Crowds spilled out over the sidewalk, so you really only had a lane of traffic down the middle.
And we heard people saying, they're coming, they're coming. And the motorcade, it just seemed like a lot of motorcycles, a lot of cars passing by it. And the motorcade slowed down. So I got this straight-on view of President and Mrs. Kennedy. And my impression at the moment was that they were just gorgeous people, big, like bigger than life. And they seemed very relaxed and happy.
12:29 p.m., 1 minute before assassination.
President's car is now turning onto Elm Street, and it will be only a matter of minutes before he arrives at the trademark.
Voice of Clint Hill, Mrs. Kennedy's bodyguard.
He started to accelerate, just barely. About 50, 60 feet down Elm Street, I was looking to my left, to a grassy area. There were very few people in that area. Some people there taking pictures.
10 seconds before assassination.
And then I watched for the arrival of the cars. I saw the motorcycles, and then the car approached. As they turned, I started shooting the pictures.
And he says, okay, here we go. That's when I remember we started actually doing the filming.
And I was shooting as they were coming along, and Jacqueline and the president were waving. And as they came in line with my camera, I heard a shot.
I heard an explosive noise to my right rear. And I saw the president grab at his throat and lurch to his left.
I took the picture, and the shots were still being fired. She did scream. She says, my God, he's been shot.
I saw the president leaning over to Jacqueline. I didn't realize what has happened. Then the second shot came. And then I realized.
Slow motion of Zapruder's grainy color footage of a burst of blood from the president's head.
I saw his head open up, and I started yelling, "They killed him, they killed him."
JFK, the home movie that changed the world. JFK, the home movie that changed the world. Black and white footage of the sky, Elm Street, and the book depository. Zapruder's color footage shows the first lady turning to her husband, who is slumped forward, and she reaches across the back of the car as a bodyguard climbs up to meet her.
It appears as though something has happened in the motorcade route. Something, I repeat, has happened in the motorcade route.
I just looked straight up ahead of me because that's the direction the sound came from. And I saw two black men leaning out of the window of the fifth floor, looking directly up above them. My eyes went on up to the next floor, and there was the rifle. I could see the rifle in this part of the stock and it being drawn in the window.
Photographer Bob Jackson and Bobby Hargis, police outrider.
When that bullet hit his head, the plume went up. And I went through that plume. It was all over me and all over my helmet and my glasses and everything.
Mrs. Kennedy's bodyguard, Clint Hill.
So I knew something was wrong. Something had happened. So I jumped from the car and ran toward the presidential vehicle. Mrs. Kennedy was coming out on the trunk. I helped her as best I could to get back into the back seat of the car.
I turned to Gail and I said, "That's it, hit the ground." And we turned and threw our kids down on the ground and covered them up.
People were screaming, and I mean, it was utter chaos by that time. Everybody was laying flat on the ground almost.
All the focus was on the car. The Secret Service man is running up to the car, and the motorcycle and policemen are, you know, flying up. Certainly the first lady on the back of the car, that was pretty startling. Many of the people came running down the hill, and it was pretty frantic. A lot of the policemen then had their guns out. Motorcycle policemen were up on the grass, people running.
And then I got off the concrete block, and I was walking back to my office. I was still screaming, "They killed him, they killed him." The people in the front kept on asking, "What has happened? What has happened?" But I just kept on yelling. They killed him.
Zapruder and Clint Hill.
I turned. I gave the thumbs down to the follow-up car crew to let them know that this was a dire situation. The car accelerated. I got up on top of the back of the car as best I could to place myself in a position to cover both Mrs. Kennedy and the president. If they were going to shoot in the car, they were going to have to hit me. I guess we were traveling maybe as fast as 80 miles an hour as we went to a hospital.
Color footage of bewildered onlookers on Elm Street in the shadow of the book depository in the aftermath of the shooting. Voice of Marilyn Sitzman, Zapruder's receptionist.
Mr. Zapruder apparently went directly back to the office. I ran down the slope. There were three men in suits running up, and that's who I met. And I said, "They killed him, they killed him." And my boss has it on film.
Voice of Abraham Zapruder.
When I was in a state of shock when I got back, I was kicking and banging at the desk. I couldn't understand how a thing like this could happen. I personally have never seen anybody killed in my life. And to see something like this, shooting a man down like a dog, I just couldn't believe. And my secretary kept on trying to pacify me. She asked me if I want a drink. I thought she was crazy. I was, "What are you talking about? Who wants a drink now?"
Voice of Darwin Payne, Dallas Times-Herald.
I was interviewing anybody I could find. And one of them I was interviewing said, "Well, our boss has film of it." I said, "Really? You know, where is he?" And it turned out he's in the very next building from me, where the shots had been fired. He was a dress manufacturer. I said, "Take me to him." His camera was right on top of a filing cabinet. And I told him, "We'll take it to the Times-Herald and develop the film No, he said, I want to give it to the FBI or the Secret Service. On television, they were saying Kennedy has been wounded, perhaps fatally.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in Dealey Plaza. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
But Zapruder said, no, no, he's dead. I know he's dead. I was watching through the viewfinder, and I saw his head explode like a firecracker.
I called the office, and I hear screaming and turmoil. And I said, what's going on? She said, oh, Mr. Schwartz, the police are here with shotguns. I said, what are you talking about? And she said, oh, Mr. Z has the films, and they want the films. And he picked up the phone, and he said, Irwin, it was terrible. I saw his head come off. I say, I'll be right there.
Voice of Irwin Schwartz, Zapruder's business partner.
When I got off the elevator, there were two policemen there, and with shotguns. I said, what's going on? And they said, we came to get the film. The Secret Service says, well, let's see if we can't get it developed. I bet Channel 8 can do it. And they put Zapruder on television.
A gentleman just walked in our studio that I am meeting for the first time, as well as you. This is WFAA-TV in Dallas, Texas. May I have your name, please, sir?
My name is Abraham Zapruder.
Mr. Zapruder?
Zapruder, yes, sir.
Zapruder. And would you tell us your story, please, sir?
I got out and about a half hour earlier and get into a good spot to shoot some pictures. And I found a spot, one of these concrete blocks that I have down near that park near the underpass. And I got on top there. There was another girl from my office. She was right behind me. And as I was shooting, as the president was coming down from Houston Street making his turn, it was about halfway down there, I heard a shot. Then he slumped to the side like this. Then I heard another shot or two. I couldn't say whether it was one or two. And I saw his head practically open up, all blood and everything. And I kept on shooting. That's about all. I'm just sick again.
I think that pretty well expresses the entire feelings of the whole world.
Parkland Hospital, there has been a shooting. Parkland Hospital has been advised to stand by for severe...
One of the nurses just got a call from the police dispatcher, and the president had been shot. He was on his way to the hospital. Mrs. Kennedy was kind of standing by the door. There were two men in the room, and I assume they were the driver or Secret Service people. They very rapidly stepped aside when we came in. So Ms. Kennedy stood by the door for a long time.
Voice of Dr. James Carrico, Parkland Hospital, 1 p.m., 30 minutes after assassination.
A priest walked out and he said, at 1 p.m. the president died. And I couldn't believe it. It was like, God, no, please, no, 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 no.
Voice of Kathy Atkinson, spectator, age 12.
I didn't even know my picture had been taken until the next day. All I remember is crying.
Color footage of men, women, and children crying outside the hospital. Contemporary footage of the book depository. Voice of Dick Stolle, Life magazine.
I'm in my office in the LA Bureau, and I suddenly got the shout, Dick Kennedy's been shot in Dallas. And New York said, how fast can you get to Dallas? I went into the Adolphus Hotel to set up an office, and I got a phone call from a colleague that a local businessman had photographed the assassination from beginning to end with an 8mm home movie camera, and she phonetically pronounced his name. She said, Zapruder. And I picked up the Dallas phone book and ran my finger down the Z's, and there it was, Zapruder Abraham. I called him, no answer. I called every 15 minutes for the next 5 hours.
You have the film in your camera.
Brought it on the studio now.
We'll try to get that processed and have it as soon as possible.
They were trying to develop his pictures, but they couldn't develop them because they were colored pictures. And we had to go to Eastman.
the FBI said, "We want you to shut your machines down and process the film we have here."
It took quite a few hours till we got those pictures. The valve was about 9:30 that night. And that's the first time I saw these pictures.
Then Zapruder's film came on, and number one, it was needle sharp. Two, the color was beautiful. The focus was locked in perfect. All during the movies, there's not a sound except the projector. And when the projector was turned off, it had to have been 3, 4, or 5 seconds like this, nothing, when one voice said, "My God."
I had 3 copies made, plus the original. One was given to the Secret Service in Dallas. One copy I brought to the FBI, and the 3rd copy I had for myself.
And Zapruder had signed something, and he left. And Zapruder and I walked out in the street. We said, "What a night." And he went home, and I went home.
Voice of Erwin Schwartz, Zapruder's business partner. Voice of Dick Stolle, Life magazine.
At 11 o'clock, this weary voice answered. Mr. Zapruder had been contacted by other reporters, and he'd asked them to come to his office at 9, and I got there at 8. He said, "I'm about to show the film to 2 Secret Service agents. So the 3 of us went into this tiny whitewashed room, and this old rickety 8mm projector. He turned to us and he said, "Are you ready?" Turned it on, and there was the motorcade coming around the corner. Then the presidential limousine disappears behind that huge road sign. When it comes out, the president has both of his fists jammed up underneath his chin. He had been hit by the first bullet to hit him. And suddenly, we get to what we now know is the infamous frame 313, where the whole top of the president's head just explodes up into the air. When that happened, the 3 of us all reacted with, "Ugh." It was as if we had been simultaneously gut punched. Once I saw that film, I thought, there is no way in hell that Life magazine is not going to wind up with that film.
The presidential limousine goes by, obscured by trees, as Clint Hill jumps onto the rear of the vehicle.
I said, "That's an amazing piece of film, Mrs. Zapruder. I think it belongs in Life magazine. We might even pay $5, $10, maybe even $15,000 for that." And I finally got to $50,000. And I said, "If we have to go any higher than that, I'm going to have to call New York." He looked up at me and he said, "Let's do it." So I sat down at his typewriter, typed out a 9-line contract, and I walked out the back door with what turned out to be the most famous home movie in American history.
A still of Johnson being sworn in as president. Voice of Clint Hill, Mrs. Kennedy's bodyguard.
It was then determined that Vice President Johnson needed to take the oath of office. I received a message. Mrs. Kennedy wanted to see me, and she simply reached out her hand and took my hand and said, "What's going to happen to you now, Mr. Hill?" And I told her that I would be okay. It was rather strange that she should think of me at this particular time when she was so concerned about what was really happening with her husband. But it was very, very nice, very thoughtful. I guess the real legacy will be that I tried, but I failed in attempting to intervene between the president and the assassin.
JFK, the home movie that changed the world. JFK, the home movie that changed the world. Commuters read their newspapers with the headlines proclaiming in large, stark letters, "President dead" and "President shot dead."
Across the world, there's shock and grief at the assassination of President Kennedy.
A national day of mourning is declared by President Johnson.
President Kennedy's body lay in state in the rotunda of the U.S. Capitol building.
1 million people lined the funeral route before President John F. Kennedy was laid to rest at Arlington National Cemetery in Virginia.
Voice of Dick Stolle, Life magazine.
That week's issue of Life was already on press when the president was shot. They made black and white copies because it was too late to do color at that point. Out of deference to the grieving Kennedy family, they did not publish the headshot, frame 313.
A sequence of stills from Zapruder's footage of the stricken president.
The copy of the film that went to New York was then seen by corporate executives, not only editors. They were so stunned, they decided they wanted to buy all rights. I called Abe Zapruder about getting the additional rights. It was a total of $150,000 for all rights.
Hello, police operator. Hello, we've heard a shooting out here. Police officer, somebody shot him. It's in a police car. Number 10.
At the Texas Theater in the Oaklift section of Dallas, a 24-year-old man suspected of the assassination of the president has been arrested. Lee Harvey Oswald is also accused of shooting dead a Dallas police officer, J.D. Tippit, while making his getaway.
A still of the murder scene in car number 10. Voice of Dick Stolle, Life magazine.
Mr. Zapruder wanted to avoid public criticism for selling this film. His lawyer finally said, I have a suggestion. We know there's a fund being set up for Officer Tippett's family. I would suggest that you give that first $25,000 to the Tippett family. And Mr. Zapruder agreed instantly.
September 1964.
The Warren Commission has today concluded that the assassination of President John F. Kennedy was the work of lone gunman Lee Harvey Oswald. No evidence was found of a conspiracy to kill the president, nor was there evidence of a conspiracy behind Oswald's murder 2 days later by nightclub owner Jack Ruby, who fired the fatal shot inside the precincts of a Dallas police station. The Warren Commission noted Mr. Abraham Zapruder's home movie as being most helpful in establishing what happened when the president was killed.
When President Kennedy was assassinated here in Dallas, Abraham Zapruder was standing on this concrete parapet with an 8mm camera. And with that camera, he recorded the tragedy. Mr. Zapruder, certainly no one had a better view of the assassination than you did. Did you then and do you now agree with the findings of the Warren Commission?
Yes, I absolutely do. In fact, I'm more convinced now because of these controversial publications coming out. I took more of a little interest to read it more carefully, and I find that the findings of the Warren Commission are more substantial than their doubts. They have no facts, no reason to believe that there was somebody else. They're just picking, or rather looking at the hole instead of the donut.
Despite the Warren Commission finding, conspiracy theories continue. Critics claim Life magazine's refusal to publicly release the Zapruder film is part of a high-level cover-up.
I think for my grandfather, it was largely a matter of feeling that he could trust Life magazine to handle the film with care and with responsibility, and that it would be protected and it wouldn't be exploited, which was a very great fear of his. But then gradually, bootleg copies started to get out, they started to circulate.
Voice of Alexandra Zapruder, granddaughter.
It was 12 years from 1963 until 1975 when the film was shown for the first time on national television. The very idea that something of this magnitude could be kept from the American public for 12 years is astonishing.
March 6, 1975.
I'm telling you right straight out that if you are at all sensitive, if you're at all queasy, then don't watch this film. Just put on the late night movie, because this is very heavy. It's the film shot by the Dallas dress manufacturer, Abraham Zapruder, and it's the execution of President Kennedy. And now?
At the bottom of the screen, the headshot.
That's the shot that blew off his head. It's the most horrifying thing I've ever seen in the movies.
Now, the Warren Commission said that all of the shots were fired from behind by Lee Harvey Oswald, and as you can see, clearly, the head is thrown violently backwards, completely consistent with the shot from the front.
I had this treasure. I was going to share it. I was going to get people to believe what I believed, and we were going to rewrite history together. The next day, we get the ratings, and the ratings went through the roof.
I'd like to know, Mr. Zapruder, your 8mm film lends support to several theories and is the basis for the present controversy surrounding the assassination. The shots came from someplace other than a book depository building.
No, as a matter of fact, I heard some comments about us, and I went back to the place where I stood when I shot these pictures. I believe I would have heard a different sound, a shot coming from my right ear. The shots would have sounded much different. I did not hear any different shots. They have no substantial evidence of any second party being involved or conspirators being involved, yet they write about it. Sensational literature. That's what I think.
Voice of Geraldo Rivera, presenter, ABC Goodnight America.
And after weeks and if not months of our own probe and talking to everybody, I came reluctantly to the conclusion that Lee Harvey Oswald alone, acting alone, killed John Kennedy, you know, the greatest man on earth.
Voice of Dick Stolle, Life magazine.
Legally, we couldn't give the film to the National Archives. We had to give the Zapruder family an opportunity to buy it. And in the end, we decided to return it to the family for $1. Later, the arbitration between the federal government and the Zapruder family took place. And then one day, I opened the paper and I see the family has just gotten $16 million for the film.
Voice of Alexandra Zapruder, granddaughter.
The financial outcome was perfectly fine. There was no celebration. This is what the arbitrators have decided. It seems fair. Over time, that film became less and less ours and more belonged to the American public. The film speaks to the total frailty of human life. Everything changes. And that it could happen to them. You know, the most beautiful, powerful couple in the world, smiling and waving, and she's incredibly gorgeous, and he's so handsome, and then he's gone, he's dead, and she's sprawled on the back of the car. People say that the 1950s ended when Kennedy was assassinated, that these editors at Life magazine, these white guys in their ties, that they were the ones who were deciding what the American people should and shouldn't see. But by 1975, you know, that was over. That was over.
Voice of Dick Stolle, Life magazine.
Abe Zapruder was stunned by what had happened. You have to keep remembering, we have all seen the film. Abe Zapruder saw the president being murdered. And, I mean, in many ways, I don't think he ever quite got over that experience.
A grainy image of Zapruder witnessing the assassination.
Mr. Zapruder, have you taken any more movies since that fateful day here?
No, I'm sorry to say. I used to be an ardent movie taker, and after that tragedy, somehow I lost, I don't know what to call it, appetite or desire to take pictures. I'm sorry, I have
beautiful grandchildren growing up. I'd love to take some movies of them, but somehow I'll have to get back to her. But somehow I just didn't have the desire to do so.
Abraham Zapruder died 7 years after the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. He was 65. Described as the mother of all conspiracies, the Kennedy assassination has inspired more than 1,000 books and 21 feature films. 60 years on, opinion remains divided between those blaming a lone gunman and others a high-level conspiracy.
The loss was great. It was an inspiration to the youth.
Footage of the Kennedys in the hours before the assassination being greeted by thousands of smiling well-wishers. A motorcade crawls along a city street lined with people, and a placard reads, "Howdy."
And I believe that our country wasn't what it is, strong, that it could withstand a shock like this. Would this be in another country where they have a one-man government? A terrible tragedy could be to the whole country if we weren't as strong as we are. That's like the loss, I think, was to this country.
Footage of the motorcade traveling through Dallas just moments before the shots rang out. The first couple side by side, smiling and waving.